Welcome to The Summit, a podcast focused on bringing you the knowledge and insights for industry leaders. I'm your host, Kyle Hamer, and I'm on a mission to help you exceed your potential. As a sales guy turned marketer, I am passionate about building sustainable businesses. And if there's one thing I've learned in my 20-year career, it's that you won't find an overnight growth scheme, a shortcut to success, or a way to hack yourself to the top. Nope. Success is the byproduct of hard work, great relationships, and deep understanding done over and over. We're here to help you unlock that success with some secrets from other people, one conversation at a time.
Thanks for joining us. Today's guest is Chris Lynn. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, Kyle. Good to be on. Thank you for having me.
We're excited to have you here. For those of you who don't know Chris is a podcaster, a natural connector, and somebody who loves helping people find the most in their environment. At the heart of every operation, he believes there's people. And by investing in individuals, molding their experience, and guiding their journey, he believes that you can create positive growth in your culture that blooms into a thriving organization. Chris, outside of those things, is there anything I missed that's important to being you and what's important for telling people who you are?
Well, yeah. Thank you for that introduction. I think the thing that we don't tend to share are our personal lives. So I am a husband and a father of two out here in California. And man, it is a crazy, crazy ride, especially right now with the pandemic, trying to learn how to be a teacher as well at home, right? And deal and also be a daycare when normally we have other people doing that for us. So it's definitely interesting. It's interesting. It's a learning experience. And what, we're 8 months in now. So, I mean, it's a new adventure every day.
Well, I tell you what, I think there's a new appreciation for preschool, for daycare, for educators. If anything that's we've been taught through this, you know, this quarantine period and this lockdown is we probably should extend a bit more grace to those people that are in childcare and child service, because It is a exhausting and never ending a series of changes. I mean, like every day is something new for us. Yeah. We've got four, so I'm right there with you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's something that, you know, I've long believed in, is we really need to invest in our education system and our educators. And so that's something that I hope, you know, our government will really focus on in the future, no matter who's in the administration or who's leading our country. Like, there needs to be a refocus on education as a whole. So, yeah.
I'll refrain from commenting given the amount of polarity that the current education leadership causes. However, let's get into what we're talking about today, because really what we're talking about today is leadership. And in today's society, everybody talks about leadership as though it's a buzzword. It's like, oh, I'm going to be a leader. A leader is this, a leader is that. But it's really more than just a buzzword. So help set the stage for us, Chris. What is leadership? And why is it important?
Yeah, leadership. I'll say it in three words that one of my previous managers told me. Leadership is influence. So it is not a position. It is not a title. It is not an authority, right? Leadership is the ability to influence others. When you think about leaders traditionally, you're thinking about managers, right? And you have someone who is managing over you or supervising over you, or you are doing that to the others. And so we've kind of melded those two things as one and the same. Now, I will say that the future of work will see a requirement of managers becoming better leaders. And there will be a merge of those two, because managers are going to be required to be good leaders. However, just because you individually or myself, we don't manage other people, we are still leaders. We, no matter what, there are people that we influence in the lives of work, in our personal lives, in our social circles, and even ourselves. We really have to be leaders to ourselves first and foremost in order to lead others. So being a leader is not about having a title. It is about having the skills to focus on people and the commitment to focus on people to be able to just be a good person and help them succeed.
You know, it's interesting because the great leaders that, or at least the people that we idolize or we put on pedestals, they've all had a title, right? Caesar was a great leader, and he was the emperor of the Roman Empire. And Steve Jobs was the founder and CEO of Apple, or Bill Gates. We can go down through person after person after person who, when we put them on a pedestal, there's some sort of title associated with it. Yep. Why do you think it's so hard to think of leadership separate from titles and leadership separate from management?
Yeah, I think that that may have to do with just the way we've researched management in the past, and we've looked at leaders. And typically, because we look at the impact that those people who do have those titles, the level of impact that they have across the organization and even across society, then we tend to look at them from that standpoint, right? Because they have a very high level of impact rather than someone who has a smaller ripple. But again, your influence can impact one person, it can impact 10, it can impact 100, it doesn't matter, you're still leading those people. I think that those two things, again, they get interchanged, but they do not mean the same thing. And so when you look at other managers who are in quote unquote leadership positions, you can see good leaders and bad leaders. And I don't necessarily subscribe to the term bad leader. I think that those are just managers, because those are people who are not focused on people. So, for example, I worked for an airline when I was younger, and the CEO at the time famously said to the pilots when they were renegotiating their contracts was, "It doesn't matter what we give you, you are a number, you can be replaced." Now, would you call that person a leader? I would not. I absolutely would not. I think that that person's a manager. I think that person's too focused on numbers, too focused on the dollars, right? And they clearly do not have a commitment to people. So again, when you look at leadership, they have a vision and they have an ability to really influence and impact the people that are around them in a good and positive way.
Is there ever a time when leadership has negative, or is it only positive reinforcement or result? Because it sounds like to me, just listening as your description of managers, that there might be a case to be made for generals in the military are just managers. They're not actually leaders, where individuals who found companies and have to make hard decisions, that they're managers, not leaders. What's the difference?
Yeah, I think that that's a good call out. And I think we've talked about this before, right? Is when we've looked back through history, like you bring up Caesar, he was a tyrant, ended up being a tyrant. You look at other heads of, you know, of civilization, like Hitler, Stalin, you know, those were clearly people who had leadership skills, but they didn't necessarily actually make a positive impact, right? They had the skills to be a good leader, but because they had a very strong ability to influence and create an impact, but they took it down a bad path, an evil path, versus a positive one. So while I would say that they have leadership skills, I would not call them, you know, a leader, a good leader, at least.
So then if you wouldn't call them a good leader, and they may not fall into managers because they had much more power and influence, what are they? Or more importantly, what are the characteristics that really make up a good leader, and the things that people that are listening should say, okay, well, first thing I ought to work on is my ability to influence folks. And once I get influence, you know, what am I influencing people to do?
Yeah.
What does that mean? What, like, how do you assess that?
Yeah, so when you have an ability to influence people, that means you have a certain degree of competency with negotiating, with persuasion, right? With vision, being able to convey those stories and that vision. The next thing is getting people to actually act on those things, right? And so when we look at how leaders and individuals can actually move the needle, as we say, or as a lot of people say, that's where that money is. And that's where the money is in organizations, is getting people to move the needle. So can you not only influence the individuals to get on board with what you're saying or the direction that you're heading, but can you actually get them to do the work in alignment with your vision and the purpose? For another example I'd like to use is an organization I was working at that was very, very, had a very strong mission, a very strong purpose. And it was a healthcare organization. And their number one value was put patients first. Now, that might seem, you know, like common sense or like a duh for a healthcare organization. But when you look at other healthcare companies, let's say insurance companies, we'll use them as the bad guy because they're an easy scapegoat. Do they actually put patients first? More likely than not, the answer you will hear is no. You hear about costs going up, right? You hear about claims being denied for something that should be routine or something that is critical to someone's care, right? But this organization I was at was fundamentally focused on that notion and that value of putting patients first. So when you have this vision of continually improving patients' lives, and you always say, no matter what decision we make in our organization, we are going to have the patient in mind and ask ourselves, is this the best thing for the patient? And right, we often debate ideas, you know, services, products, whatever it might be. At the end of the day, we are going to do whatever is best for the patient. And so that vision that our leadership had allowed us to be empowered to take action and actually make an impact. And like I said, move the needle.
So, I mean, when you're talking about that though, when you in a healthcare organization, when you have different personalities, you have things that need to get done, and you're in a leadership position, it can't all be butterflies and rainbows if we're dealing with somebody's life or somebody's health. How do we assimilate, or how do we pick a different leadership style or a way in which to get the right thing done, to do what's best for the patient, even if there are 50 or 60 different opinions on what the right thing is for the patient?
Yeah, that's a really good question. One of the things, the strategies that I like to use is to, if there's flexibility within the organization or the team, if there's a possibility to test one or two or three possible outcomes. We see this a lot here in Silicon Valley, right? When you test different programs and the way they work behind the scenes to see what works best, right? A/B testing. And you have a very clear outcome at the end. You figure out what you're trying to measure or what the expected goal is and see which one hits that goal first or better or whatever it might be. So if you have that flexibility, I would say do that testing. If you do not have that flexibility, I still say you need to have the adaptability and flexibility within your organization to make mistakes and to try things out. So if you can only do one thing at a time, and I've worked at a much older organization that really could only put forth one thing at a time, they still would test it and go into it with this mindset that this is temporary. And they let their teams know, saying, this is temporary. We're going to try this out. If it doesn't work, we will, and it doesn't achieve what we're hoping for it to achieve, then we will go back and try something else. So again, you have to allow for that flexibility and that movement within your organization to be able to try new things. And again, back to your original question, when you are debating those ideas, you do need to get everyone on board. That is one of the keys to successful leadership. When you look at the work of Patrick Lencioni, and if you've read his book, Five Dysfunctions of a Team, you have to have trust, you have to have accountability in order to get results. And so in order to get those results, you have to have the trust within the team to actually be able to openly debate and agree on the next step, even if you don't necessarily agree with that that method or that way of moving. You have to get behind it. You have to get your team behind it so they don't come back later and say, you know, they don't try to sabotage what was being implemented or tested.
So, I mean, if this has been written about and this has been talked about and this is stuff that we can glean, why do you think so many organizations struggle with finding leadership and finding good leaders instead of just managers or instead of knuckleheads? Like, why is this a challenge for organizations?
That's a great question and something I'm constantly asking myself. And when it comes down to it, they are focused on the bottom line, or they're focused on clients. They're not focused on people. Again, leadership is about people. You don't become a leader if you don't want to deal with people. If you don't want to deal with people, don't be a leader, or don't be in a position to be a leader, because leadership is all about other people. And so we have this old school mentality that is still persistent across our society, where if someone is a good top performer, we move them into a management position, right? Sales is often the culprit of this. And so I'll use them as an example. And they're also an easy, tangible way to explain this analogy. You have someone who constantly hits their sales targets or exceeds them. And they have great client feedback all the time. The clients love them. However, usually those salespeople don't always have the best rapport within the team internally. But because they're a high top sales performer, they say, well, you're great at what you do. Let's move you into a management position, a leadership position, so you can teach and lead a team to do it as well. And they instantly move that person into that position without considering, A, is that person actually a good leader? Do they have the correct people skills to implement and teach and grow and develop others? And two, did they actually get the investment from the organization to develop those skills? Again, a lot of times it's, oh, you're a great performer, you're a great employee, let's move you into this supervisory role and not give you any development. And so that's another reason why, you know, we don't see a lot of great leaders or managers. And the other thing I will say is, I don't remember the exact number, but it's a very low number of, when you look at StrengthsFinder, there is a very low percentage, I think it's in the single digits, of individuals who are naturally wired to be good managers. And so when you look at it from that standpoint, a large population, over 90% of the population, are not naturally going to be good managers. So you have to focus on, okay, well, if most of the population is not focused or is not inclined to be a manager, we have to give them the skills. And if you're going to give them management skills, you also need to give them leadership skills. And so again, that's when they kind of conflate and they merge the terms, but you have to absolutely be focused on investing in your people to be able to lead. And again, even people who in your organizations who don't have managerial responsibilities, they should still take leadership skills courses. You still need to develop those skills because they work with other people. And again, when you think about the notion that leadership is influence, they need to be able to work with others and lead others, even if they don't have an authority over them. So again, right, focus on developing your people and make sure that the people that you do promote and lift up through the organization and who are climbing the ladder have a commitment and desire to actually want to lead.
Well, that's the study you just brought up was done in 2015 by Gallup, and it shows that 82% of the time companies choose the wrong person to put into management.
Yep.
And that really only 1 in 10 have the natural skills to do, to manage. Yep. But you've made the distinction between management and leadership, that leadership is influence. Why would I want to influence, or why would I want to have leadership skills? Why would I want to develop that if I wasn't ever going to move into management? Like, what would be the point in being a leader inside my organization if I'm not going to A, get compensated for it, or B, have to ever manage people? That's not something I want. Why would I develop those skills?
Do you work with other people? Like, I would say 99% of the people who are in a job have to work with someone else, right? You have to have those skills to work with others. And when you look at something like negotiation, that is a leadership skill because you are going to disagree on something at some point, right? Even if you're just permanently work with one other person, you need to be able to persuade and communicate and negotiate with that person. You need to have the conflict management skills to be able to deal with conflict as it arises. Those are all leadership skills. I'll give an example from my own experience. I was at an organization where I was the only person in the talent development department. I was the talent development department. I had no one below me. I only had my manager, who was an executive, on the executive team. Now, I'm clearly not in a management position, but I had to have leadership skills to be able to influence others and get work done. This was an organization of a few hundred people, and I needed to create learning programs for all of the different departments. The only way you can create those learning programs at a good enough pace is to have the skills to be able to influence other people to get them to do work that normally I would do. Not saying I didn't do work, but if I worked on those programs by myself, it would take me years to get everything done. And by the time I finished, everything would be obsolete and I would have to start all over. So if I can, again, influence, 10, 20 people and get them to move things and make an impact from there, then things move much quicker. They can work together and I can help create connections across the line, right? Something that at that organization was an issue was they had multiple offices and they all did the same work, but each office had a different way of working. And sometimes even within those offices, the teams within those offices had different ways of working. So we had to create alignment. We needed to align on a process. And so as we developed learning for this organization, we had to agree on what was the best way, or the best way for the client and best way for our team to do our work. And so the only way I could do that was by getting those people together and helping them negotiate and figure out what was the best path forward to complete these projects. And from that standpoint, I would say that, that is a leadership skill. That is me leading those individuals to be able to get the work done.
When you think about the effort there, and I'm trying to drive through here, because there's a couple things, at least from my perspective, that I've heard as it relates to leadership that I don't know is as we've gotten into today, but that there really are both positive and negative leadership styles. Like you can be a leader, you can be like Hitler and Stalin and these guys, and you can be 100% coercive. And as a coercive person, what you're doing is you're trying to get somebody to do something because it benefits you, or you're manipulating the situation. But it's a leadership style that is very negative in its outcomes and in where it heads. There's leadership styles around being a pace setter where you're like, look, I'm just going to work ridiculously. It might be like the Michael Jordan, where it's the first person in the gym, last person out. And if anybody else doesn't work at that level, that they're not a leader, they're not capable. Whereas, you know, a lot of what I feel like you've been talking about are more along the democratic, hey, let's get consensus and work together, which is a positive leadership style, or maybe even the coaching, which is, hey, I see these things and we're developing. And again, is a positive style. Wouldn't a good leader be able to use both positive and negative leadership styles interchangeably to drive an outcome or to drive an organization forward? Where, like in the situation like you were talking about, you had to use democratic and coaching to kind of help coach people through improving this process, versus if you were coming in trying to do change management and the company was about to go out of business, you might have to just flat out dictate and coercive and be maybe authoritarian in the leadership style, where it's like, no, it's this way or else.
Yeah.
And it's mostly negative in what's coming across, but it's actually positively influencing where the organization is headed, or positively influencing the relationships. Isn't there a time for both?
Yeah, that's a good call out. And so what I'll say is, first, you actually perfectly described my strengths, my top strength, which is inclusion. Right, I'm a very inclusive leader or person in general, just naturally. So that's a very good call out on your part. An observation is that, again, for me, I want to have alignment and have this more democratic process when I lead. And then once we can find alignment, then we act and we get stuff done, right?
And what I would say is what we call that is at least based on the categories that I'm aware of there, and there may be more, but I would call that an affiliative leadership style, where your focus is really around creating harmony, building strong emotional bonds.
Yep.
You know, your statement that sums you up is people come first.
Yep.
You're really good at empathy, building relationships, getting consensus, strongly done with communication. And that leads naturally into democratic, of getting consensus and people voting and participating, or in coaching, because you're empathetic.
Yes.
But that's not the only way to get things done, right?
Yeah. And again, when you look at something like StrengthsFinder, there are 32 strengths. And you're not going to have all 32. You have one or two that are your defaults. And then you have a top, you know, they say a top five, right? That you rely on. But back to your point, when you look at something where, let's say you have an organization or a team that is just kind of floundering or kind of going down the toilet, and you need to make some decisive action or have decisive action. And as you say, like this authoritarian kind of way, I would say, yeah, you absolutely can use those. You can have those approaches. The thing that I would say is the reason that some of those things are considered negative, and they don't have to be negative, is the way that they are perceived. And I will say, right, my style is not always perceived positively, right? And so someone might look at my style of leadership and say, Chris is a bad leader. Why is he talking to everyone? Why can't he just make a decision, right? Someone might perceive that as poor leadership. However, that may not be poor leadership. You might have to use your other strengths or other areas where you need to, again, make decision. And so when you have those more direct, as you say, direct, decisive leaders, the thing that I would say is, and that's key for any leader, is to communicate. You have to communicate. You know, hey, we need to make this decision. We are going to move this route because ABC, XYZ, whatever. When you communicate with your team, when you communicate with those that, again, that you're influencing or that are being impacted by your decisions, having transparency and giving the answers to why you are doing what you're doing is very important, because that's how you get buy-in. And again, that kind of comes back to my, you know, democratic, inclusive side of things where we need to have alignment. But it's a, hey, get on board. This is what's happening, right? We're turning the ship this way instead of that way in the way we were going. We're going left instead of right now. This is why you need to get on board, right? And having that decisive nature, but also being transparent and communicative, allows people to say, okay, like, let's go. Or, hey, I don't know. And, you know, I have doubts about this. I don't like this decision. You still need to allow those people to air out their laundry to get them on board. Because again, you might have employees in your organization who might be a rebellious faction within the empire. And they say, you know what, screw this, I'm going to sabotage it. Or no, I'm going to go as slow as I can. You need to get those people on board. No matter what, you need people to do the work to execute your vision. So you have to get those people on board. And that starts with communication.
Well, I think it's interesting because if you look at, let's take the political landscape, and you know, everybody is like, oh, don't talk about politics on your podcast. And we're not talking about politics as much as leaders today. But if you look at the difference between, say, President Trump and where we sit at this moment, regardless of the outcome of the election, President-elect Biden, you really do have a dichotomy of leadership styles, right? Trump is a very direct, coercive, he's really not democratic. He's looking for people who, what is it? I think he's been caught saying, I like people who don't get caught. I like people that aren't prisoners of war. I like, you know, he makes these really divisive statements, and the statements for some people hold a lot of influence because they agree with, they have consensus behind, oh, I like somebody who's direct. I like that there's no filter. I don't get political weasel words. This is great. I understand where I sit with this person. This is somebody that I will let lead me. Conversely, you look at Biden and he's a bit more of a consensus builder. He might be more democratic or affiliative in his approach. He appears to have more empathy. He appears to get more buy-in and consensus as he makes decisions to move things forward. And it's very divisive in our country of red versus blue, one way versus the other, but a lot of it boils down to leadership style. Why do you think that it's so challenging for people inside of organizations to lean into what their natural tendencies are, what things should be for leadership, and not be seen as a jerk because they're able to make a decision really, really fast, or to be seen as a consensus builder and can't actually lead when they're spending their time empathizing and making sure everybody's on board before they move the ship forward? Why is that so difficult?
Difficult from what? The leadership the leader standpoint or the employee standpoint?
Somebody who wants to be seen as a leader to feel like they're actually leading, because they're in this spot where leaders at times can need to be divisive and decision-making and just move forward regardless. Doesn't matter. No person left behind, but they're all dead. So we're moving on. Or, well, let's pick up all the bodies and let's bring them all together, but it may mean we all get killed in the process. Well, I don't know who I am. Why would I need to have influence? Why would I need to speak up? Why? I just want to sit over here and do my job.
Well, again, if you want to do your job, you still have to be able to have those skills to lead. Again, if you are the type who likes to, you know, sit at your desk or, you know, right now at home, lock yourself away in your office and get work. Again, you still have interactions with other people. And maybe it's just you and your boss. You still have to lead your boss. You still have to find a way to communicate with them. And again, communication is a key leadership skill, right? You still need to have a way to persuade them or negotiate or debate them. Again, those are all things that leaders use. As far as your question in, you know, why should someone really focus on worrying about the type of leader they are or how they're going to be a leader? That's when, you know, there's a difference between thinking what other people say, thinking about what they think, and being hampered by what other people think. There's a difference between being aware of what's being said and allowing that to affect you, right? Just because, again, I'll use myself as an example, just because I like the democratic approach and the consensus approach, and people might say I think I don't come to decisions quick enough, that doesn't necessarily mean I can't use my other skills. I can't use my other strengths. If my boss were to say, hey, Chris, we really, really, like, this deadline got moved up. We need you to crank this out in the next week, tomorrow, whatever it might be. I will shift gears and I can utilize other strengths. Just because you have a default strength or a default way of working doesn't necessarily mean that's your only way of working. You know, going back to the tech company I was at, whenever we were implementing new learning, we had about at one point, a 48-hour head start. 48 hours.
To create, design, develop,
and then implement new training. 48 hours. And I had to, because, you know, the product and engineering teams would say, hey, we updated this thing or we have a new process. Here you go. And then for me, I'm like, oh, I got to teach our team, right? A department of 100 people, you know, one VP, two directors, six managers, and countless supervisors. And I need to get all of those managers on board to understand what is happening in 48 hours. So again, can I work fast? Yeah, absolutely I can. And that becomes less of a, hey, what do you think about this, as a, hey, I need you to know about these things that are coming and this is what is going to happen. So again, you don't have to, just because you have a default doesn't mean it's your only way of working or leading.
Well, in the example you're giving here, it seems to me like leadership and effectiveness could be a bit interchanged. But it also seems like maybe your tech company was a bit uneducated in what it actually takes to develop proper training, proper development, yeah, proper education, proper communication channels. And so that could be a really difficult hill to climb. Even if you're effective at leading through and getting stuff done quickly, there's only so many times you're going to do that before you're like, all right, enough. Like, yep. I can't. Like, but you did the last 35 times.
Yeah.
So somebody that's in that situation, how do you lead up? How do you begin to make influence so that you can say, look, this is insane. 48 hours isn't enough. How do I make these changes?
Yeah. So from there, it's about looking at what are the issues that might come out of it. So in this case, whenever the engineering team pushed forward an update to our patient care team, they often saw help desk tickets spike for 24, 48 hours until people figured it out. And that caused a lot of turmoil for our help desk team back on the engineering side.
The help desk people that you had to train in 48 hours, you deployed something, they weren't fully trained, and then the customers were coming in asking for help?
No, it was more our internal team, right? We would implement the training, and then if they didn't remember it because it was a very quick, like, hey, you need to do this, or oftentimes, you know, the engineering team might forget to tell us about something. And
never.
And this is no knock on them, right? It's just that we have different ways of working and we have different processes. They, you know, so they would all of a sudden say, like, why the heck do we have a 300% spike in tickets from our own internal team? They can't, you know, why can't they do their jobs? And for me, it was about, hey, connecting the dots. You have this problem. We have this problem. Are they connected? and finding why they're connected and figuring out a solution that helps everybody, right? So in the end, we actually ended up implementing a system where we, myself, and that at the time, we actually grew to a team of three. We ended up seeing, hey, you know, we now have the product roadmap, you know, 1 to 2 months out. So we can start preparing for those changes much more far in advance. But and in order to do that, then we were able to see a drop in tickets because we knew what was happening. The leaders and our patient care team knew what were happening. And then we were able to share that information forward. And then we also had some backup knowledge management processes that I put in place as well. But again, it's about, when you look at leadership, it's about influencing those people and saying, hey, we noticed that you have this problem in help desk tickets. And it happens to be right after you deploy something. And when you deploy something, we don't usually get that much of a notice. So maybe let's fix that. Like maybe you give us more of a heads up. We can create the proper training, or we can know everything that is happening in this deployment. And then we can create the necessary articles and knowledge management pieces to let our team know. And then again, lo and behold, those tickets dropped to, I think, about 15%. So again, you're talking about working with other people. You're going to have, if you're working with any other people, you're going to have to lead them at some point.
So what do you say, or how do you see the world as it relates to somebody that's inside of an environment that like, I feel stuck. I feel frustrated. I don't feel like I can lead. I don't feel like I have influence. How do you help those people find their leadership, find their influence?
Yeah, that's a great question. Start with yourself. In those cases, I would say, well, what are the things that you can control? What are the things that you can do to grow and learn? And if you can start finding those ways, you can start finding different areas that you can either begin to have influence on, or you might, you know, the follow-up question I always get is, well, what if nothing happens from there? Well, maybe you need to start looking at other areas to work. And I know that that's not easy right now, especially in 2020. So it's about, can you grind it out? Can you get it done? Can you live with it? Is that something that you are able to cope with momentarily until you find something better? But again, if you're really stuck in a situation where a manager is just absolutely not taking any coaching from you, not willing to learn, and I've been there before, you start looking at, well, where are other areas that I do have control in that I can influence? There's always something that someone can control, even if it's very small. And then working on those and growing that little area to be bigger and bigger. And then eventually you'll find a way. And again, the most often way I tell people to lead is to take care of yourself. Self-care is very important. Physical, mental, emotional state, spiritual state. You might not have a religion, but everyone has spirituality. Everyone believes in something. So believe in yourself, right? Take care of yourself. You have to take care of yourself if you want to be able to, you cannot pour from an empty cup. That's the saying I go back to the most, is you cannot pour from an empty cup. So take care of yourself first. Second is, don't stop learning. You absolutely have to keep learning and growing, right? If you have a garden and stuff stops growing, guess what? It's dead. Don't die inside. Keep growing, keep learning, keep finding little nuggets to take to be a better version of yourself than you were yesterday.
That, you know, I was going to say final thoughts, but I think you kind of just gave them to us. I mean, from a coming full circle here, when we think about leadership is more than a buzzword, I mean, what you just talked about right there in those couple points is really why leadership is more than a buzzword, right? It's not just something that we read in a book. It's not just something that we post on LinkedIn or we get accolades for at the front of the company meeting. It's action.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
Chris, if somebody wants to get a hold of you or wants to know more about your podcast or becoming a better leader, how do they do that?
Yeah, you can connect with me on LinkedIn. My LinkedIn URL is Lead with Chris. You can also follow me on Instagram, Lead with Chris, or you can follow the Leading People First podcast also on LinkedIn and Instagram, just Leading People First. The podcast is available everywhere you get podcasts, Apple, Google, Stitcher, Amazon, the whole gamut. So take a listen and connect with me, and let's continue the conversation.
That's fantastic. So last question of the day, two questions. Second to last question, is there anything that you would like to share with us that I didn't cover yet?
I've said it already. Take care of yourselves, especially this year. We are in such a state of exhaustion for multiple reasons. And so it's very important to take care of yourself. And I can speak personally, and I'll share a very quick story, is the days that I don't practice my mindfulness practices, which I do throughout the day, quick 2 to 5 minute little practices throughout the day when I have a chance. I'm a very cranky person at the end of the day if I don't do this, because I'm not at a sense of peace and presence. So take care of yourselves, whatever that means for you. You know, if that means doing a quick workout, or if that means going and drinking more water, or, you know, whatever it is, take care of yourself and really allow yourself to recharge. The emotions we're all feeling are all valid right now, whatever they might be. Overwhelmed, a sense of overwhelming, depression, you know, anxiety, whatever it is, they're all valid. And that's not to say that, you know, that's not a general statement. I mean, those are all valid reasons and emotions. So take care of yourself and make sure that you can just, again, if you take care of yourself, you'll be able to take care of others better.
If you could be any animal, what would you be and why?
Oh, man. Make me think. I mean, the default animal that I go to is my favorite animal, which are otters, because they're cute and cuddly, but they are also ferocious. I've actually gotten attacked by an otter in the wildlife before. I was surfing and I thought I was going to die. I got hammered by a wave, came up for air, and this little black thing popped out of the water. I'm like, oh my God, I'm about to die. I don't know what that is. Is that death? I thought it was death. I literally thought it was like death coming for me. And it turned around. It was an otter. I'm like, oh, it's so cute. And it like charged at me and used me to like pull itself back underwater. But you can be cute and cuddly, but ferocious at the same time. So yeah. And you'd get to swim. Yeah. Do all sorts of things. Be admired by millions of people. Yeah.
That's super awesome. That's a great answer. I don't think I've ever had that one. So, hey, Chris, wanted to thank you so much for coming on and sharing your insights in leadership, helping create additional perspective for those of us that are on our own journeys for leadership. So thank you so much for being a guest today.
Yeah, Kyle, thank you so much for having me. It was a lot of fun.
You've been listening to the Summit Podcast, Chris Lynn, Kyle Hamer. And we've just covered why leadership is more than a buzzword. And if you're starting at the end, rewind, go back to the front. There's some good stuff there. If you are at the end, make sure you like, follow, subscribe, and share, because the message here today can't just end with you. It needs to be paid for it. I'm your host, Kyle Hamer. You've been listening to the Summit Podcast. And until next week, keep on keeping on.